Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take a look at, well, getting ourselves in sort of in shape, avoiding pains, aches, strains, that sort of thing that always comes around in the fall as we're sort of doing a lot of fall yard work and cleanup work and that sort of thing. For me, it's always a problem, or almost always. I think every year I do something to myself, and I did again this year as well. Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody here to help me out and help you out as well with your ache or pain. Bill's an associate professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, senior physical therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic at the UW Hospitals and Clinic. Bill, great to have you back.
Larry, thank you. Wonderful to be back.
Yeah, well, great to have you here. Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. She's also the graduate program director for the Rocky Mountain University of Health Professionals in Provo, Utah. And Lori?
Good to be here. What a fabulous day. I'm sure people are outside doing things that maybe they shouldn't be doing. I don't know.
Larry, and I love the analogy about the squirrels. You're right. When the squirrels stop playing and start working, you know the weather's changing.
Right, right, exactly. We have a little ground squirrel that keeps making laps right past our back door. I think he's storing things somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, we tend to follow suit. You're doing work around your yard, and people want to get ready for wintertime, and it is a flurry of activity.
Mm-hmm. And I thought of it, this Bill's moving. He's carrying boxes. Mm-hmm. I was raking and taking leaves and tossing them up into the back of a pickup, and I thought, this probably isn't the smartest way to do this. I'll be calling in on Monday.
I was thinking, I wonder if I can find a good PT somewhere.
Yeah, and here I was breaking up cement, actually. There was a post that was cemented into the ground, and I'm breaking it up with a pick.
Yeah, but you didn't get symptoms for several days.
Yeah, it was like a week went by, and then it's the only thing I can think of that that would have caused the problem. I was really in a lot of pain this last week.
Yeah. Sometimes when you do something, and Bill is saying kind of like a car accident, it can be enough to get things stirred up. And sometimes it takes a few days for the swelling in that area to hit sort of a critical point where it then pushes on the nerve and then creates symptoms. And people say, well, geez, it happened a week ago. They expect that the symptoms are going to be immediate. But some things swell slowly. And for some people, it may be that, in a younger, healthier tissue, no, I'm not making a comment about your age, Larry, that it could recover. But in a tissue with a little bit of arthritis and stuff, sometimes your daily activities, carrying a backpack, lifting a child, all those things can stir it up even further where it can't recover. It all snowballs. So,
well, I'll tell you what, it's getting better. Actually, today is the first day, and I thought, oh my goodness, here I've been waiting for you guys to.
That's right. All we had to do was show up. How about that? You can call. We'll show up on your doorstep. Your aches and pains will go away.
That's right.
Well, it's still there, but not nearly as bad. Believe me. Well,
it's like going to the doctor. Well, a week ago I had a terrible pain in my knee.
Well, Jill in Milwaukee has, a pain in her thumb. So let's go there. Hi, Jill.
Hello. I've been doing a lot of weeding with a hand trowel, and it does have a padded handle, but I have had a sharp pain where I would bend my thumb and the joint kind of acted on its own, where you bend your thumb, and also there's a almost like a nodule at the base of the thumb on the inside of the palm side that's pretty painful, and I don't know whether it's a tendon or ligament from the base of the thumb that goes towards across the palm. Almost seems like it's shortened.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any other medical conditions? Any kind of arthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, anything like that?
Not rheumatoid arthritis, osteoarthritis in the knees.
Okay. All right. Well, it sounds like you have a mechanical issue with your thumb, and it's something that should probably be seen given the nodule that you're having. You could have a nodule in a tendon that's getting caught on something from the pressure of holding the trowel. If you're talking about your thumb kind of moving on its own, sometimes there can be a problem with what's called your extensor hood. And when that is tensioned, it's supposed to extend your thumb. But if there's been some damage to it, at a certain point, it can actually cause your thumb to flex. And because your thumb is so important for function, all kinds of functions in life, it's something that shouldn't go untreated. So I would go in, have your doctor look at it. You're probably going to if it's not resolving, see a hand therapist to take a closer look at it. But it's something that should be seen.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We had an email from, who's it from?
Nick.
Nick says, I have a question about stair climbing. I've been moving things up and down from the basement for the past week several times a day. If I wear running shoes or Crocs, I get sharp pains in my knees. If I go barefoot, no knee pain, but I get very sharp pains in my Achilles tendons. I tried all sorts of traditional stretches. They don't seem to help. Can you explain the mechanics of what's happening and suggest a remedy?
Well, we'll start with the easy thing. The remedy is the stop carrying the boxes. But, that doesn't help. But the mechanics of it, Bill and I were discussing this, and there, a little more information would be helpful. Is it upstairs or down? Because the mechanics of going upstairs are different than the mechanics of going downstairs. So if it hurts one way but not the other, it suggests one thing. But sort of the general statement would be, if you're going up and downstairs carrying a load and you have shoes on, you use different muscle activation patterns than you do when you're barefoot. When you're barefoot, you tend to stay more on the ball of your foot, and you tend to tension your muscles more in your calf and ankle, which is why his Achilles is hurting, because he doesn't have any support from a shoe for his Achilles, and his Achilles is working harder. But that being said, apparently the Achilles tightening is offloading his knee some and changing mechanics so his knee doesn't hurt. So, the remedy for that, you can try yet a different pair of shoes. You can mix it up. You could stretching isn't probably going to make a big difference for this kind of activity. Right. So whatever the box moving is, finish it up, split it up between shoes and no shoes, ice when you're done, stretch when you're done to get through it.
Yeah, Nick doesn't say if he's finished moving things or not. Right. Hopefully the job has been completed. And I know this isn't always possible, but getting a dolly where you can load three or four boxes at one time just to decrease the number of trips you're making.
Yeah.
Or if you can spend maybe 20 minutes, 30 minutes shuffling boxes and then go do something else and come back even 20, 30 minutes later to split the job up a little bit. But I would agree. It sounds like once the fire starts, the pain starts. Oftentimes stretching isn't necessarily going to relieve sharp pain like that quickly. And
there's some dollies that are kind of set up for actually going up and downstairs to make it. There are designed for up going up and downstairs. That's that really work nice.
Yeah. That's right.
The other thing is, habitually when we go up and down the stairs, we tend to go on the ball of our foot and put, for example, going up the stairs, pay attention next time you go up the stairs. You tend to put the ball of your foot on the stairs and go up with just that portion of your foot. Try putting your entire foot flat on the step so that you're not using just your Achilles to balance yourself as you go up.
Right. And sometimes in alternating legs you're leading with, one trip lead with your right leg, next trip lead with your left leg, just to try to balance things out a little bit too.
Instead of going step over step, go step together, step together, step together, step. Isn't that a dance move?
It is.
Yes, it does.
There you go. Maureen and Stevens Point will give you a chance now. Hi, Maureen.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Lori, Bill. Boy, I sure can use your advice. I'm sound asleep, and I wake up and have the sensation that a police officer has tasered my right arm. And I'm not sure if it's it's not like a pins and needle kind of numbness, nerve pain, but like a cattle prod.
Okay.
And it's I'm quite miserable. A doctor has prescribed Neurontin, and I'm really not getting. It's not going away.
Okay, Maureen, how long has this been going on?
Well, like over a year.
Oh boy!
Yikes! Okay.
A couple of years ago, 3 years ago, I sustained an attack. I was grabbed by the arm and severely jerked around, and I did have rotator cuff surgery that he had to cut off the end of the clavicle bone, mm-hmm. you know, make my arm fit.
Right, and a decompression.
I had to remove shredded pectoral muscles. And I believe that that has been resolved, but not the neck injury, the whiplash or whatever has happened.
Yeah, well, and sometimes with that kind of injury, you get a nerve stretch injury, a brachial plexus or traction injury as well. Have you seen a physical therapist in the last 4 to 6 months for this?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
No. That's why I'm calling the pros.
Yeah. Well, I would...
Insurance is a problem.
Okay. Well, if you're, I think a physical therapist, at least an examination, would be worthwhile. It could be a combination of things. There's ways to try to sort out how much is this nerve related versus scar tissue versus tendon, and how much is related to your neck or shoulder or both, because the treatment approaches would be different for those. The fact you've tried the pain medication, Neurontin, and that really isn't helping, it then something else needs to be done to get this jump started for you.
Yes, yeah.
And, so a therapist could tell you within a visit or two what they could offer or not. And mm-hmm. You know, and if you're willing to leave your contact information, Lori and I could contact you, and you know, we can help you find a physical therapist in your area.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd be very grateful, because this interrupts my sleeping, and I mean, the pain, it just doesn't relent. It's just awful. And I'm wondering, is it positional, that something about the sleeping, the neck? I have a good pillow. I have a solid Stearns and Foster mattress. I mean, is there anything I can do now?
Well, are you waking up in a certain position each time when this happens?
No, I'm trying to resolve that, figure out. When I had the surgery. And prior to the surgery, that's part of the problem. It wasn't the original MRIs weren't that conclusive, and so I didn't have surgery for a year after the injury. And so I would sleep with my arm propped up and in one position,
right,
so that there was no pulling at all of my shoulder. The doctor did assign a permanent workers' comp 10% disability, but I do have function with that arm. I did go to physical therapy after the surgery, and it helped tremendously.
Yeah.
But nerve neck thing is... has occurred since then.
Yeah, it can be really debilitating. You know, in terms of sleeping position, supporting the arm, two best ways are you lie on your side with the involved arm up, and you have a pillow or two underneath that top arm to support it. Or if you're lying on your back, you have a pillow underneath that arm, but also that shoulder blade as well, to take tension off the neck. But it sounds like you need more than just positioning from what you're describing, Maureen. And I think, again, like a physical therapist can help give you some guidance.
Okay. I'll tell you what, we'll put you on hold, and Judith will get your information and pass it back to Bill. Thanks, Maureen, for calling. I appreciate it. And we've got, I believe, have her on hold. Let's see here. Better on hold. Okay. Our guests today, Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, who have been regulars on the show for a long, long time.
It's over 15 years.
Over 15 years. Yeah. I tell you what, it's
indeed
been great. They have helped thousands of people in that time. Bill's an associate professor at the UW School of Medicine, Public Health. Lori, a physical therapist, athletic trainer for the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. And they'll be with us right up until 12:30 today. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking aches, pains, sprains, and strains today with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. Larry Mueller here. Before we get back to our questions, though, I did want to invite you to something called Migrations with Mueller. Migrations with Mueller field trip, as a matter of fact. You can join me and our producer, Judith, for a special field trip for Wisconsin Public Radio listeners Saturday, November 12th. From La Crosse, we have 10 pairs of tickets to give away to this exclusive free trip to observe one of the world's great migratory bird flyways, the Mississippi River. And we'll be doing that with some experts. And after the morning trip, we'll all enjoy a meal in La Crosse together. All the information is posted on our Facebook page. So you can go to the Larry Mealer Show to find all the information. And Mealer is spelled M-E-I-L-L-E-R. So you can go to the Larry Mealer Show. You can enter to win a single pair of tickets by sending an email to madison_outreach@wpr.org. So that's Madison and then the underscore outreach@wpr.org. Must include your phone number, mailing address, and Larry, my name, needs to be in the subject line for your entry to be valid. Emails must be received by midnight Sunday, October 30th, to be considered. And we'll be having a random draw on November 1st. One entry per person. Transportation and accommodations are not included, but everything else is, the meal and the trip and so forth to see the birds on the Mississippi Flyway. That's going to be a lot of fun. And maybe you can win a ticket. So go to our Facebook page. If you didn't get all that information, just go to the Larry Mealer Show. You'll find it all right there. Maggie in Blue River has a question for you. Hi, Maggie.
Hi. What great timing. Everybody in Wisconsin should see the Mississippi River, especially this time of year. It's fantastic.
Oh, it's beautiful.
I wanted to talk about briefly how much success I've had taping my feet with plantar fasciitis. Real simple taping just around the arch and over the top just does wonders for me. I've had it quite a few times, and every time I even get a twinge of that kind of pain, I immediately tape both my feet, and it never develops, and it goes away, and it's fantastic. And then the other thing, recently for about a month I had ankle pain, and then I sort of topped it off by sort of falling and twisting my ankle a little bit. So I went on YouTube and looked up, you'll probably cringe when you hear this, but there's tremendously good videos to look at on how to tape.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so I looked at about 10 different videos and picked out the one that I thought would look the best to me and the one that I could do myself and tape my ankle up. And immediately I felt so much better. So I think taping is out of this world, especially for plantar fasciitis. I think it should be your top recommendation.
What kind of tape do you use?
I just go to Walgreens and get I wish I could get better tape, actually, that's easier to rip.
Uh-huh. You're using like a white athletic tape? Or?
Yeah, I'm using an inch and a half athletic tape.
Okay. All right.
And I know the pros use the kind that are really easy to rip because they're ripping constantly shorter pieces.
Well, they have a lot of practice.
Yeah, yeah. They do. And then you become sort of a fan of these trainers that come running onto the tennis court and do, you know, tape up an ankle in 10 seconds flat, and all these really quick taping artists. But you know, you can take your time and do it yourself, and it provides such support and such pain relief that I just wanted to mention that.
That's great. I'm a big fan of taping for plantar fasciitis. In fact, I have orthotics in my shoes, but when my plantar fasciitis flares, I have to take them out and I tape. I use duct tape because I can do one piece of duct tape and it covers the whole bottom of my foot and it works like a charm.
Ouch.
It's just fine. I mean, the bottom of your foot's pretty tough.
Yeah.
So, and in terms of the ankle taping, you know, for people who are going to need to tape their ankle on an ongoing basis, the lace-up ankle splints are a really good way to go. The research shows that if you're involved in a sport, the tape loosens really within a pretty short time after you get out on the field. So if you really need the support, the lace-up ankle brace works well because you can retighten it. So
makes sense.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Maggie.
Thank you. Glad it's working.
Thanks a lot for calling. Gene in Oshkosh, let's give you a chance now. Hi, Gene. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Laurie, Bill, and Larry.
Hi.
And Larry, I hope you feel better. I've got a question about a relationship. I am an 81-year-old male who is in good shape, but this is the relationship that I'm questioning is that I've had an MRI, and there are some fusion of the vertebra in my neck. I have seen a physical therapist. Very, very nice person. and had massages, and that doesn't seem to have done any good. My question about the relationship is, if I'm sedentary, there is no pain. If I get up and pick up a garbage can or go out and rake some leaves or something like that, a great deal of pain is developed pretty much throughout my body. There's dizziness involved, and I'm concerned. My question basically is that vertebra, fused vertebra, is this possible that it is causing pain pretty much throughout my body, including the long muscles in my legs and buttocks and so on?
Yeah. Well, that's a good question, and a couple of thoughts. The vertebra fusing, usually that's a long process related to degenerative changes, osteoarthritis, where eventually the joint stabilizes and it can fuse or ankylose over time. And sometimes what can go along with that are some bone spurs or osteophytes that can take up some of the space that's available for nerves or the spinal cord. And that can cause a variety of symptoms throughout the body. Oftentimes it's more related to balance, numbness, and weakness, both hands and feet. And Gene, if that's what you're experiencing at all, it's not like you've had an MRI done. They should know the status of the nerves and the spinal cord, and you know, could that be a factor here or not? It's generally unusual. The pain in tendons and things like that. I mean, I suppose anything is possible, but the dizziness as well. That also might be related to your neck. When I've seen people who have conditions like this in the neck, it's really important that you have good flexibility in your mid-back, upper back, and through your shoulders. Your neck is going to be stiff. That goes along with the fusion. So you want to get as much mobility as you can elsewhere. And so if the physical therapist didn't address your upper back and mid-back and shoulders, that's where you need some work. And there's ways that you can self-stretch. There's different kinds of mobilization and massage to help loosen that area up to help you compensate for what your neck can't do. They should also be assessing your balance and the reason why you're dizzy. I mean, it could be lots of things. Blood pressure, it could be related to your neck. But you want to work with your physician with that and just make sure that, because obviously you don't want to fall. That can be associated with this.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so very much.
Yeah, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Mike in Wisconsin Dells, it's your turn. Hi, Mike.
Yes, good morning. Just wonderful show, by the way. It's all
Thank
very
you.
Interesting when you have the various people on your show. Question for you. I was actually born with very poor very bad flat feet, and when I was 13 years old, a surgeon recommended to my parents that they remove a bone on the side of my one foot to try to free up the arch so that I would have an arch in the foot. That is, I mean, it's severely flat foot to the point that the ankle is almost rolled over to the point that I'm at times not only walking on my foot but also leaning my weight on my ankle of my foot. I've been to see a couple orthopedic surgeons, and I'm only 47 years old, who are recommending that I just get that I should have the foot fused because it's causing quite a bit of discomfort now at 47 because I've been walking this way for many, many years, that I have the foot fused into a position that would be closer to what would be a normal position. But, you know, in the past, I've always been told by doctors that fusing your foot is pretty much the last resort because there's no going back from that. Are there any other options I should explore besides doing that?
Oh, boy. That's a tough question. You are correct in that there's no going back after you're fused. The question is, you know, you don't know what you don't know about how your foot is going to function when it's fused, and there you are. So, you know, my question to them would be, okay, how can we best simulate what that might be like? You know, can you get me a splint and an immobilizer, a tape, a fabricated cast of some sort that might reproduce what the fused foot would be like, so I can kind of road test it and see how it works and see how it feels for me. So, you know, that would be a question that I would put out to them.
Yeah, because I am worried about, you know, once it's fused that I, you know, yeah, it may take away the discomfort, but I may be seriously limited in my ability to walk.
Well, yeah. It depends upon how much they're going to fuse. You can accommodate well at adjacent joints, and that's something that Bill was just alluding to, talking with Gene about his neck. And that is, if they fuse your ankle, your talocrural joint, you can accommodate with some additional motion in your foot and your toes to accommodate for that. So it's possible, if you have good flexibility in the rest of your foot, that you can function fairly well with limited ankle. Typically, you know, you need dorsiflexion, which is the motion of your toes coming up closer to your ankle. You need that when you walk, but shoe and shoe modifications can accommodate quite a bit for that. So, you know, if it's just the talocrural joint, you can probably function pretty well with that if you have sufficient motion elsewhere in your foot.
Mike, I'm assuming you've tried orthotics and special footwear over the years?
Oh, yes. I have orthotics that I've had with me from, I started with the braces to the ankle support.
Yeah.
And now I've got some, I've always had custom orthotics in my shoes since I've been born.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And so are you just getting to the point where you're just having so much pain that you can't function, or why are you thinking about this now?
Well, over the years, it used to be just discomfort when I was on my feet for long periods of time, but now it's to the point, I'm sure, probably just because of age and as many years as I've been doing it, that now it's my feet are sore almost all the time, and I think my right foot, or what I call my good foot, is actually starting to give me discomfort because I'm constantly taking it easy on my bad foot because there
sure.
is so much discomfort.
Mm-hmm. Favoring
yeah.
the right.
Yeah.
Favoring it, yeah. So now I'm actually seeing some issues with discomfort in my what normally was my very strong foot, of the foot that I don't have any issues with, and it's because I find myself limping to try to favor that foot.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you don't want to start limping and changing your mechanics a lot, because then you're going to start loading joints and wearing those out. So what your ankle and your feet can't accommodate because of your pain, you're going to start transferring to your knee and your hip and your back. So, you know, the question is, when do you intervene to stop that cascade? You know, when's the right time? And that's where just working closely with your physicians can help you to make that decision.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, yep. Good luck. Art in Milwaukee, on to you. Hi, Art.
Hi. So I have a sports injury. I dropped a weight on my hand in May, and my left middle finger was swollen and red, and I thought there was a broken blood vessel, which I think is still probably what was going on. But I noticed starting in August that I cannot by itself straighten it out fully. The last joint up to the tip of the finger doesn't fully straighten out. So I did see my internist a couple weeks ago, and he said probably what happened is, he said this is a common baseball injury, actually, where I guess a baseball hits your finger, but right at the base of the nail, there's a tendon that attaches that may have been
yep.
detached, and if I had come in promptly, they might have put a splint on it, hoping to keep it straight for a while, hoping it would reattach, and now probably not a lot we can do about it. But I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that.
I guess my thought is your physician is spot on. That's okay. Exactly what I would have said, that yeah. there is a tendon that attaches there. It's not an uncommon sports injury, mm-hmm. and you have to splint it right away, and it has to stay splinted for 6 weeks, and it generally reattaches and has a good outcome. But this far down the road, there's no going back.
You know, and if that finger is getting in the way with you doing things, there are splints that you can wear. At this stage, it won't correct the underlying problem, but at least it'll keep your finger in a position that maybe is more functional for you. So there are splints for the different joints of the fingers. So if it's more than just a nuisance and interfering with things, that's something to consider, Art.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Good luck. Thank you for calling. Email from Mary Ann. Are the toning shoes that you see that, you know, that rock as you walk, are those hard on your knees? Mary's heard that they're comfortable, but might be a problem if your knees are compromised in some way.
Well, you know, it's like most things. We've gone through all different styles of shoes over the years, you know, and everyone is purported to be, you know, the best great cure. So it's very individual. Some people love them and they can walk farther and they have less pain, and it changes their mechanics just enough where it's an improvement for them. For other people, it's not going to be an improvement. It'll be harder on their joints, and typically you'll know after you start wearing them. But I don't know that there's a good way to decide ahead of time who will be successful in them and who won't.
Yeah, I think we've had emails and calls like this in the past. When you change footwear this dramatically, you want to transition into the change. And it's people who go from one type to another type full time where the body doesn't have a chance to adjust. And that can lead to tendon issues and muscle or other joint issues. And so it's kind of one size doesn't fit all.
Yeah.
And what it does to your foot mechanics and knee mechanics can be different from one person to the next.
We have Audrey in Kenosha with a question for you guys. Let's go there. Hi, Audrey. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, back last year in June, a year ago June, I had a fall in the bathroom where I fell, or I didn't, I miscalculated the last step of the ladder, and I thought I was on the second rung, and I thought I was going to just hit the floor. Well, anyways, when I fell, when I did hit the floor, I fell, I sprained my ankle, and ended up on the floor, in the toilet, and underneath the sink.
Oh,
and
gross.
So I thought I tore a rotary cup. I kind of, like, twisted my knee a little bit, but I did definitely sprain my ankle. And my sprained ankle, it healed up very nicely, and I didn't have any aches and pains for up until, like, this January, so it was, like, 6 months later. My knee started hurting a little bit, and after my knee started hurting, I could hear a little bit of grinding in the kneecap, so I'm assuming I tore my meniscus, but my big toe, the ball joint, started hurting, and it almost feels like the ball of the foot is separated. If you take your toe and if I move my big toe sideways, it feels like it's actually being ripped off the foot. And if the covers grab it and bring it upwards, in the middle of the night, I'll get like a lock toe where my toe just almost goes vertical, it actually goes vertical sometimes and horizontal the other time, and it will just freeze in that position, and it's very, very painful. And I used to wear a lot of high heels, which is very painful now. So I went down to my flat shoes, and I have a very comfortable pair of Bjorns that I used to wear, which now I can't even wear them because going flat, it really hurts. So I've been trying like a mid-range heel and putting insoles in there and cutting out the section where the ball of the foot is to give it a little bit more relief. But I still have a lot of daily pain, which makes me limp around. I have a retail establishment, and it makes me limp around my store. And it just, between my knee and my foot, I don't know if the knee hurts because of the foot or...
Right.
Yeah. Right. You're right, Audrey. They're probably interrelated. You know, it's possible that when you fell and you injured your ankle, you could have also sprained that toe and just not been aware because you were focused on your ankle. And it may not have been until your knee started hurting and you changed the way you move, changed the way you walk, limped a little because of the knee, and now you're overloading the big toe.
Okay.
So they are probably interrelated, and given the magnitude of the problems and the amount of time you spend on your feet, I think you should go in and have it looked at. You know, it could be some arthritis in that joint. It could be a sprain. It could be, you know, a whole foot mechanics issue. It could be related to the knee or all those things together. But I think to sort those things out, you really need to go in and have this leg looked at to get you on the right track.
If I press on the actual ball of the foot,
uh-huh,
it's very painful in certain areas, like right. I guess where the big toe would meet the joint.
Yeah.
Right.
It's very painful in that area.
Right, exactly. And that joint is prone to arthritis. So if you have a long history of wearing high heels, being on your feet and then you had an injury to it, you may have just accelerated the arthritis in that joint. And now the little bit of change in how you're moving because of your knee pain has stirred up the arthritis there.
Yeah. Okay.
So a physical therapist can take a look at it, look at the mobility in that joint. You know, when you catch it just right, you catch that arthritis.
Okay.
That could be what you're feeling.
Yeah, and if you do this, if you go in, bring your common footwear. You know, if there's a couple of pairs of shoes you wear off, and bring those in because that can help the therapist as well.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Thanks a lot for calling, Audrey. Rich in Chippewa Falls, on to you now. Hi, Rich.
Hi. I hurt something in my in my glute or my butt, my sitting bone on my left side, and I did it water skiing in June. Nothing that I do seems to, it doesn't seem to be coming around. It doesn't get any better. And where it really bothers me the most is when I'm sitting. For example, sitting in a car, it aches. It's not a sharp pain, but just an ache. Like, I got to move my leg. I got to find a different position. It's just not comfortable. And, you know, I do yoga and stretching. My where I feel it the most is in the forward bends.
Okay.
Type of exercises. I've seen a physical therapist once so far, and he doesn't seem to think it's a problem with my hamstring at all.
Okay.
But he's suggested doing these stretches that stretch that area in my butt, and just wondering what do you guys think it could be? Any ideas?
Well, in that sit bone area, a lot of muscles converge and attach there, including hamstrings. And sometimes you can suffer a tendon or a muscle tear. Sometimes you can have a little fracture, what's called an avulsion fracture, where the tendon actually pulls a little piece of bone off, you know, the part of the pelvis. And then, of course, you can get scarring in that area after an injury like that. And so stretching seems reasonable. I would think stretching not only your hamstring, but that buttock area, the back of your hip also should be stretched, which is a different stretch than your hamstrings. Also doing some deep massage is to help try to break up some scar tissue. And then working those muscles eccentrically from a strengthening perspective, even though it probably feels more like tightness than anything else, the muscles also can become weak. So eccentric strengthening can be useful. And they also should be really evaluating your low lumbar spine and your pelvis as well with those kinds of injuries. There are a number of joints in the pelvis that, if they're not set just right, can set you up to have this continued problem. So stretching hamstring and hip should be part of the program, but the therapist should also be examining you above and below that area. And then the eccentric strengthening should at least be attempted to see if that may be an important piece, too.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Bill Boisenald, associate professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, one of our guests, the other, Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at aches, pains, sprains, and strains with our two guests, Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody. Larry Mueller here. Thank you so much for listening in. Questions, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email at our email address, which is talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question or comment there. An email from Sam. I recently dislocated my patella, my kneecap, for the third time in my life. The MRI showed bone bruising, but no other damage this time. Since I'm a cyclist, I have excellent knee and leg strength, so I don't know what seeing a PT would help. But my worry is that this injury and poor recovery from my previous injuries has imbalanced the tendon and muscles in my knee. I wanted to find out if seeing a kinesiologist would help, and who they would recommend to see in Madison.
Well, I guess the question I'd have is, how did you dislocate your patella? And if you have great leg and knee strength, why you dislocated, and then subsequently says that poor recovery from my previous injuries has imbalanced tendons and muscles in the knee. Yeah. So it's kind of a mixed message there. So, you know, I'd recommend that he goes back to a PT, because a PT is not just about strengthening exercises. PT is about looking at the whole picture and trying to figure out why he continues to dislocate. And giving him strategies that whether, you know, if it happened while he was cycling, they will put him on his bike, on a trainer, and look at him cycling to see if there's some kind of imbalance there. They'll look at his core strength to see if his hip position is part of the problem. If he has had bone bruising in the past, you know, he is correct that that is an issue. You know, they're starting to follow bone bruises farther out now and thinking that those are some of the precursors to the development of degenerative joint disease and so on and so forth. So, you know, looking at taping as one possibility as an intervention, but, you know, again, that's just a temporary intervention so that it can help facilitate the right exercises and the right mechanics around his hip and lower extremity. So I think seeing a PT, a sports PT, that specializes in cyclists, and we have some of those at UW, and I'm sure there are other clinics around the area that have cycling specialists that can look at the mechanics. And again, if it happened on his bike, there are also, you know, interventions on the pedal that could be discussed as well.
Mm-hmm. A Facebook question from Libby. My husband, and who's 30, and I'm 26, are talking about running the Chicago Marathon in October of 2012, so next year. Any training suggestions? We're both in generally good shape, but have never run a race before. And what about those new barefoot shoes?
Well, I love that they're starting early.
12 months ahead. This is really good.
That's perfect. And, you know, if they belong to, you know, a club, you can get together with the trainer there and lay out a training program for the next 12 months that includes gradually increasing running mileage, you know, starting out running and walking, gradually increasing distance. Strengthening exercises should be a part of it. It shouldn't be just running. There are many running clubs that have first marathon training programs, so I would go with that. But in general, I would stick with cross training, not just running, particularly including core strengthening, hip, lower extremity strengthening exercises as part of it. And the barefoot shoes, you know, for someone who hasn't been a runner, you know, I'm not sure I would go there to begin with. I think experienced runners who know their body would be able to introduce a change like that and know what's different. But for somebody just starting out, I don't think it's a good idea to start with those.
Yeah. And part of the training program will be running shorter races and then over time gradually increasing the distance of the race. So at some point doing a half marathon and see how that goes. I mean, most likely this should work for them, but some people reach a threshold where the body says, I can't do any more than this. And so gradually upping the distance with the races themselves is part of the training program.
Dave and Tomahawk, it is your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'll try to make this brief. Last fall, I began to develop a pain in my a rear end after longer runs, subtle enough that I didn't really think too much of it for some time, and noticed it also throughout the cross-country ski season after longer training sessions. And this really got irritated after the Berkey. I went and saw sports medicine for it, and I was diagnosed with high hamstring tendinopathy. Since then, I've been seeing sports medicine for it. I've given all kinds of different stretching exercises, different strengthening exercises of various kinds, trying to find something that would work, a lot of foam rolling. Nothing has been particularly successful. I stopped running as of May. Since then, actually, the discomfort has gotten more common. In other words, I feel it more often than just after. It used to be something that only appeared after skiing or running. It's there kind of all the time now. I went to see a chiropractor for active release, got that done. I think that helped a little bit with some of the discomfort. I also performed Graston techniques. I think that helped with the discomfort as well, but it's still there. and not getting any better, and not sure where to go with it at this point.
Okay. Let me start with this. With the strengthening exercises, have you done some heavy eccentric work? Was that part of the strengthening that you've tried?
I'm between physicians right now because I'm going to get somebody else's opinion on where to go with this. And in the meantime, in my own research has shown me that doing some eccentric strengthening is kind of the way to go.
Okay.
And so I've done doing some reverse ball curls with an exercise ball about every other day. And I've been increasing how much I've been doing that. And I think it's actually helping a little bit, to be honest with you. But go ahead.
What about weights, like on your stomach, lifting with two legs, lowering with the involved one?
No.
Yeah.
Haven't done that.
You give that a try.
Yeah, I would
give that one a try.
Yeah.
The more eccentric work, it sounds like you've had lots of work done locally in the area with the deep massage and the stretching, which is part of this. But the fact that you've noticed a little bit of change already, I think it bodes well to keep pursuing that. The other thing, if that doesn't help or you reach a plateau, if whoever you go see next about this, if they haven't done a straight leg raise test with you or what they call neuromobility testing, nerve dynamic testing, the sciatic nerve runs through that area. And sometimes with some scarring, the nerve can get bound down a bit or scarred down a bit. And with the activities that you described here, that area needs those tissues need to be mobile as well. And there's ways to gently stretch the sciatic nerve, mobilize the sciatic nerve, and differentiate that from your hamstrings and other tendons. So that'd be something else to consider if that type of stretch hasn't been done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. An email from Steve in Milwaukee. Could you discuss from the physical therapy perspective recovery after classic spinal fusion, meaning the non-laparoscopic approach? For example, a several level fusion from lumbar 3 through sacral 1, what range of time is there before someone can walk, go up and down steps, drive a car? What do you suggest as to physical therapy after this procedure?
Well, physical therapy will certainly have a role with this, and the more levels that are fused, the longer the recovery time and the greater there are with precautions. And so being fused from L3 down to the sacrum or S1, they'll have you up walking quickly. I mean, that activity is important. What will be limited for a while is sitting, including driving. It's the bending or flexion that you have to be careful with. The surgeon can give the best idea in terms of time frame. I'm not sure if this is just a posterior fusion and an anterior fusion, if they're going to use bone only or they're putting in hardware. That makes a difference in terms of how quickly the activity begins. But ideally, there could be a preoperative visit with the physical therapist. So they'll have the surgical information. They can run you through some of the exercises you'll be doing early on and then give you an idea of how things will progress over time. But with three levels, the three-level fusion, the recovery time is going to be longer than if it was just one level.
Mm-hmm. All right. Nancy and DePere, we are on to you now. Hi, Nancy.
Good morning.
Morning.
This is so timely, this program. This week, I'm having problem with one foot, and it is my longest toe, which is my second toe, next to my big toe. Seems like it's somehow jamming up and crunching up, and on the bone on top of my foot, I have a huge bump. I mean, a very large bump that's protruding up. None of this is occurring on my other foot. Now, I just didn't even know where to turn to ask a question of where would you go to talk to someone about to find out what is causing this.
So this just started this week where you're having this pain and this change in the mechanics of your toe? Or has it
Absolutely.
Been developing over time?
The longest toe, occasionally I feel a sort of a jamming on it.
Mm-hmm.
But this bump on the top and the pain overall has just been this week.
And the bump on top is on top of your toe? The second toe?
No, it's on top of the bone, the major bone going from my ankle down to my large toe, right about in the middle.
Okay. The bone, there's a little bursa that sits on the top of your foot there, so you could have a little bursitis in that bump on top. It could also be just a sign of the mechanical changes in your foot. So if you've got that long second toe, it's called a Morton's toe, And you're getting this feeling like it's jamming up or cramping, it could be a sign of changing mechanics in your foot, where your foot's collapsing a little bit, and some arthritis in those joints is creating some mechanical changes in your foot, and that could accentuate the bump in your midfoot that you're now seeing. So you could see a podiatrist to look at your mechanics. You could see a physical therapist who specializes in foot and ankle. You know, and what they would want to do is take a look at both your feet, see why one's different from another. Sometimes we see those kinds of changes in one foot when there's a leg length difference, because in general your body tries to even out your leg length difference, and it usually accommodates that at your foot. So one foot will be one way, the other foot will be the other way, trying to accommodate a leg length difference. So a physical therapist could sort that out and would look at you kind of from stem to stern to see what was causing this mechanical change in your foot. So that's where I would go with that.
There you go.
I appreciate the advice. Thank you so much.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Bill Boisenault, Associate Professor at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Lori Tyne Brody, our guest, physical therapist and athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. So glad you could join us today on the Ideas Network. We're talking today about how to avoid injuries and how to recover from them if they happen anyway. We've got things like yard work and sports. They're great for both body and soul, but without attention to safety, they can lead to aches and pains or even worse. And when we try to pick up or pack many of those activities in just a few hours on weekend days, there's a big risk of overusing muscles. And my guest today, physical therapists Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, here until 12:30 today to answer your questions. When you call in, you can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. Be sure to visit our Facebook page. Go to The Larry Mueller Show. And if you like the page, while you're there, you'll get daily updates on upcoming show topics. And we certainly welcome your participation. We'll be back right after the news. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, taking a look at aches, pains, sprains, and strains with them. And lots of people, apparently, guys,
it's that time of the year,
have aches and pains. Yeah. So let's go to the phones of Greg and Prairie du Chien. Your turn. Hi, Greg.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've just got a comment on the last caller you had. I had the same issue, and a few weeks ago I had an x-ray taken of both feet, and on the top of both feet and all the joints, I was diagnosed with bone spurs. And I had the same description of what she described she had. That's not my question. I have a question of my own. I'm 40 years old, and I've suffered from gout since my mid-20s. Up about 7 years ago, I finally went on allopurinol. I was afraid to start taking it because of the side effects. It could cause more pain, more attacks of gout. I did go on it. It helped. But now I have lost a lot of mobility in my left ankle, more so the outside of the left ankle. It's almost double the size constantly. And they said that I have a uric acid crystal buildup, and it's formed a wedge in my joint. My question is there anything other than surgery that they could maybe inject that would dissolve that crystal? Would I be able to go in and have it opened up and grind the uric acid crystals out? Or will allopurinol over time help dissolve that?
Yeah, I'm not sure there's anything from a medication perspective that will dissolve the bone locally like that in terms of what you need. And it sounds like you have these structural changes in the bone, and I can imagine what that is doing to your walking and stairs and things like that. The question really is, one, how much pain do you have with your daily activities, and how much mobility do you have? If it is really impacting mobility, then if it hasn't already, it's going to start impacting your knees and your hips, and as your body starts compensating compensating for this. And that's when you have to really consider being more aggressive treating this to prevent issues from developing, especially above in other joints. But I'm not aware of anything that can be injected in that area or pills you can take orally that are going to dissolve that that type of tissue change.
Okay. Mm. And it has definitely affected my hip on the same leg. When I lay on my back, my left leg actually turns sideways, and my foot is laying sideways on the bed where my other foot sticks straight up. Yeah. And I do have severe pain in my left hip most of the day.
Okay. Oh. Okay. I mean, that's typically what happens, especially with the year's history that you have here, that you might want to consider having that dealt with surgically. The question would be, is it going to come back again? You know, if they do remove this, then what are the chances and probability that it's just going to grow back again? So if you haven't had that discussion, that might be useful information too.
Yeah. Good
and
luck.
Thank you very much for the opinion.
Yeah.
Thank you, Greg.
Appreciate your call. Larry in Waupaca, it's on to you now. Hi, Larry.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a diabetic. I have neuropathy. What's described for me is gabapentin for the, I don't know what you would call it, the going in my feet and hands. Is there any other medication that would help me even better?
Well, you know, that's kind of a question for your physician. I presume you've been through a variety of medications, but gabapentin's a pretty common one that's prescribed for the pain of diabetic neuropathy. So I don't know if there's anything else, but that would be a discussion you should have with your physician or the pharmacist who can provide you with a lot of information on medications and what works and what doesn't. But gabapentin's pretty common for diabetic neuropathy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
You betcha.
Thanks a lot for calling. Gary in Menominee, on to you now. Hi, Gary.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
About 2 weeks ago, I was going down a grassy slope and it was wet. My feet went out from under me, and I put my left arm out to break my fall. I felt immediate pain in my wrist and my shoulder, and I thought it would just go away after a while, but it's been 2 weeks, and it actually seemed to be getting worse. I can't raise my arm up above my head, and then otherwise, if it's, you know, in another position, it just kind of aches.
What about the wrist?
That still hurts a little bit, but not nearly as bad.
Okay, let's just start with the wrist. Where does your wrist hurt?
Right around the around the bone.
On the close joint. To the thumb or the little finger?
More the thumb.
Okay. So given where your wrist hurts, we can't rule out the possibility of a navicular fracture. And that's something that really needs to be seen right away. So it could just be a sprain. If you said it was on your little finger side or, you know, in the middle, I'd say, okay, it's probably just a sprain. Give it a little more time. But if it's on your thumb side, it's just not something you want to mess with. Your shoulder sounds like there's a good chance you tore your rotator cuff. Yeah, so you need to go in and have that arm looked at.
Yeah.
Because it's if and the fact that it's feeling worse after 2 weeks, you should be feeling better after 2 weeks. Things should be slowly getting better. Yeah, yeah. You need to have
61 years old. I thought maybe I just don't heal up as fast.
We don't heal as fast.
That's true.
Our repair mechanisms are not as robust, but still, after 2 weeks, you should be better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you should go in and have those looked at sooner rather than later.
Thanks for calling, Gary.
All
good
right,
luck,
Gary. Good luck.
Appreciate it. Richard in Lake Villa, Illinois, on to you now. Hi, Richard.
Hi. I have a long story. In 02, I tripped over a mower at the golf course, and I jammed my shoulder and broke a bone in my elbow. And it was really pretty sore, and the doctor said, well, give it time. Well, eventually, about a year later, it was pretty well healed, and I could use it, and I could play golf and stuff. But in 08, in December, it started really hurting me like mad. The pain was terrific. And so I went and had a cortisone shot. And the cortisone shot, about 6 days after I had it, my bicep broke.
Ugh.
And then, of all things, the doc says, well, he looked at the MRI and he says, I don't really think there's much I can do. He says, until I get in there, I can't tell whether I can fix it or not. And he says, highly problematic. So he says, and it probably won't be much better anyway. I'm 86 years old, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And so he says, don't do any wells. Unfortunately, I fell down the stairs.
Oh.
And I hit my rotator cuff again.
Oh.
And that was a year ago in July. And it was to the point where I couldn't even lift my arm. And it's gotten better now, but is there any kind of therapy that you can do for something like that, or am I just too old and I'm never going to heal?
Oh, you're not too old.
No.
86 is not too old. you know, there's all kinds of things that they can do in therapy to help with your pain and to help with your function. You know, will you get all your rotator cuff strength back? No. Will you get your biceps back? No. Once your biceps ruptures, it's not going to heal. And most people do just fine with a ruptured biceps, you know, unless you're hauling, you know, 100-pound bags of cement around. You know, you're going to be just fine without your biceps. But the combination of that with your rotator cuff makes it a little problematic for function in your shoulder. So a physical therapist can help you with teaching you how to move in a way that is less stressful for your shoulder. They can teach you modifications. They can also give you strengthening exercises to strengthen muscles that can compensate for your biceps and for your rotator cuff. So there is help for you, and they can talk to you about pain-relieving strategies to help with that as well. So, yes, there are things that you can do.
Is there anything that it feels like when I try to lift it over my head, like there's muscles in the back that I'm working against?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And part of it is that if you've been without a rotator cuff for a while, you have a change in the mechanics of how your shoulder works, and it kind of wears on your shoulder a little bit more. You get this, we call a migration of your humeral head of the ball and your ball and socket, and it creates some funny mechanics in your shoulder. So, again, the physical therapist can help teach you some compensatory strategies so that you don't have that, as well as some modifications in how you do things so that you don't have to get your arm in that position to do those activities.
Well, I've already learned a lot of myself. But
I bet you have. I bet you have.
I put up storm windows that weigh about, wood winds that weigh about 25, 30 pounds.
Oh,
yeah,
boy.
Well.
Pretty
so,
hard with one arm.
So, yes.
Tough.
Yeah, well, that's just, Richard, you only got one good one left, okay?
Be careful.
So be careful and maybe see somebody for a visit or two, just to get maybe a couple things that you haven't already figured out yourself.
Yeah, Richard, the other thing when you go in is talk to the therapist about the fall. Just describe that, you know, we fall for all kinds of reasons, and maybe some suggestions they give you around the house with rugs or things so you don't fall. Or if you get a little lightheaded when you sit up too fast, they can check your blood pressure. And so talk about the fall a little bit too when you go in.
Mm-hmm. And good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. An email from Sandy, just returned from a 3-week trip during which we put on about 2,500 miles driving and riding. After the first few days, I started having pain in my left shoulder blade, the wing area. The pain gets fairly intense and now goes down the back of the upper arm and down the outside of the lower arm. I've used ibuprofen at times. It does help. Stretching does not seem to do much. We got home yesterday. The pain's about the same. I'd appreciate any advice you might have.
Yeah, what Sandy's describing is pretty classic for a neck problem, a cervical problem, and with a nerve being irritated. And the sitting and the posture from sitting and driving certainly can tie into that. And the shoulder blade pain is classic in terms of coming from the neck, and then moving down into the arm fits a nerve. A nerve is irritated someplace. And I'm not surprised that the stretching isn't helping. Sometimes actually stretching can make things worse. When a nerve gets irritated, it doesn't like to be stretched. And so one of the things I recommend to people is to keep as much tension off that nerve as possible. So if they're standing, I tell them put your hand in a pocket or hook your thumb above your waistband or a belt loop. When you're sitting, have that arm supported. with a pillow or a knapsack. And when you're lying down in bed, if you're on your back, have a pillow underneath that arm and shoulder blade. If you're on your side, have that top arm supported. Just take whatever tension off that nerve and give it a chance to heal. If the arm pain becomes more intense, more constant, start getting some numbness and tingling, that's when you want to go in to be seen. But long car rides can do with people, but what's Sandy describing, that's coming from her neck.
Okay. Beatrice has a question about her piriformis muscle. She says, I've been doing stretches and applying heat after I stretch, but it's still tender and hurts when I walk. Do you have any suggestions?
I would stop stretching, for one. The piriformis muscle is a very close relationship with the sciatic nerve, and there are times if the sciatic nerve is being irritated as part of this, again, it's like the last email, a nerve that's irritated doesn't like to be stretched. There's nothing wrong with stretching the opposite side of the hip, kind of the quadricep area, which can take some tension off the back of the hip. When she's walking, shorten the stride length. When you walk with long steps, that puts a stretch on the sciatic nerve. And I would use heat or ice. It's deep enough that I think whatever feels more comfortable. And be careful with bending and prolonged sitting. And if this goes on for another week or two, then go in and be seen, because it might be coming from her lumbar spine and not just that area of the piriformis.
Hmm. Facebook question from Adam. My mother-in-law is having some back and neck soreness after a massage, but my wife must have had a massage as well, had no problems after hers. Are there any causes and or things she can do to help with the soreness?
I wonder if they're going to the same massage therapist.
Like they were probably.
Yeah, probably. You know, it's not unreasonable to have some soreness and feel a little bruised if somebody has worked you over well, but that should be gone within 24 to 48 hours. That happens sometimes after stretching an area that is really tight. So it's not that unusual. If she goes back again, I would let the person know that there was soreness and how long it lasted, because sometimes you have to make adjustments about how aggressive are you when you do a massage. Maybe you need to back off a little bit.
Right.
But using, you know, maybe alternating heat and ice over the areas that are sore.
Yeah, typically just getting up and moving again. Sometimes it's from being in one position and getting joints moved in ways that they aren't typically moved. And for an older person, you know, those joints are probably less mobile. They're more stiff, a little more arthritic than a young person whose joints are more supple and can tolerate those kinds of loads.
Jackie in Milwaukee, on to you now. Hi, Jackie.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to share a patient response with the man who has a severe flat feet and is considering surgery. I also waited probably more than 10 years before having the worst of the 2 feet done. Waited till I was 67, and I just have had a wonderful result. The foot surgeon did a double arthrodesis. I followed rehab faithfully with a great physical therapist, rented a knee walker, elevated my foot whenever I could. I needed minimal pain medication, have good orthotics now, or new orthotics. I've always worn them. And the only thing I've really lost is my ability to walk on cobblestones, but I really never could do that anyway.
Right.
So that is nothing that I've lost.
Right, that's right.
I used to hobble like I was 95, and my friends used to laugh and say, "What's with you?" I said, "This hurts."
Well, that's great feedback.
It's a wonderful result. He thought he would have to do a triple arthrodesis. He only needed to do a double. And I have, you know, some wonderfully expensive screws in there. And some cadaver bone. And the knee walker is the greatest thing since sliced bread. Everybody should rent one that needs it. And rent it before surgery so you can drive around your house and figure out what furniture you have to move.
Yes, get
the crutches.
Right.
And figure all that stuff out so it's not such a shock, and go up and down the stairs on your butt if you feel safer doing that. And I mean, I just got, you know, we can do this. We can figure it out.
You good for you. Jackie, what was your recovery time?
4 weeks non-weight-bearing.
Okay.
And then 4 weeks partial weight-bearing. Gradually added more with the help of the physical therapist.
Okay.
And I'm a retired nurse. I knew that I was going to follow this. I was only having this done once.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I was ready to practically go dancing.
Right. Well, good for you. Good for you.
Now I may do the other foot next summer. The seasonal thing is an issue, I think, if you don't have an attached garage and if your mm-hmm. doctor and physical therapist don't have attached parking. Mm-hmm. Because in this climate, think about what the sidewalk's going to be like.
That's right. Yeah.
When
yes.
you have to get to the car. And so that's why I opted for better weather. But I think I've done a little bit of damage to the knee on that side because I waited, like you said, you know, it's the knee, and then it's the hip, and then it's the back.
Right.
And so I would encourage that gentleman to get a really good surgeon in and not wait, you know, too long.
Great.
Yes.
Well, thanks.
Feel better.
Thanks
yes.
for that
yes.
great
Thank
call,
you, Jackie.
We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Marvelous.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
Oh, great call. Val in Dubuque, Iowa, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Val.
How you doing? Thanks good. For taking my call.
Sure.
Past retirement age, still working. When I do walking, my I go maybe 5, 10, 15 minutes, and all of a sudden my legs get real numb, and if I go to a squat position and stay there for a little bit, and then I stand up again, the numbness goes away. And I was just wondering, is there any exercise or talk to a therapist? I've gone to chiropractors. They kind of say, well, it could be you're putting pressure on the sciatic for you because of the way you're standing when you're walking. Any comments?
Yeah, what you describe is pretty classic for spinal stenosis,
okay.
Which is narrowing, so there's less space for nerve roots. So when we're standing and upright, there tends to be a little less space for the nerves normally. And so if there's anything that's already taking up some of that space, then the nerves get irritated, and then you get the numbness. And then when you squat, that puts your spine in a flexed posture. It actually mm-hmm. opens up the space for the nerves, and that's why you're getting the relief. Although it sounds like it's temporary at best, you know, the fact that you can only be on your feet for 10, 15 minutes, and it's both legs. I'd go see your physician, and they'll probably do some imaging so they get a good look at how much space is available for those nerves. And you want them to do a good strength test and a good, you know, neurological assessment as well. But it's coming from your spine, and it's pretty classic in terms of this what's called spinal stenosis would be my guess. You know, if you could be on your feet for hours, you know, 2-3 hours, and then they tingled a little bit, and you sat down, and then you were good for the 2 or 3 hours, then there's exercises that can be done, and a physical therapist may have a role for you. But you know, if I was seeing you, I would want some information about the nerves and the space available for the nerves and your neurological status.
Okay. Mm. Yeah, when I work though, I do some. I help out. We refinish gym floors. I have no problem doing that all day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you've picked the right profession, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, you know, again, especially if it's both legs, you really have to be careful with pressure on nerves and make sure there's no bowel and bladder changes and weakness isn't starting as well. And that's where you would want to start.
Does weight in the affect it if you're thinner? Does it help you?
Well, it can help some, but typically the issue is not necessarily what's around the belly, but what's around the spine.
Okay.
And so longer term, you know, losing some weight or better core strengthening can help.
Mm-hmm.
But you really want to know to what degree those nerves are involved first.
Okay, appreciate it.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And Bill and Kakana, hi to you.
Good morning. Thank you, Larry.
Mm-hmm.
The caller that called in that was having an problem with his ankle, I missed most of the call except for the very tail end, and I basically was having the same thing. Ended up with a lot of orthotics, a lot of therapy, and finally found a doctor in the UW system that replaced my ankle.
Mm-hmm.
And after 12 months, I'm back to 99% of normal.
Oh, good for you.
Good, good.
So Mike's problem was severe flat-footedness, and that was his issue.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, that part of it, I missed that.
Yeah. Was yours for arthritis?
The joint was wore out.
Right. Yeah.
And he was talking about fusing it. Mike, your caller was.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Correct.
That was one of my options also, which I didn't really care for. and I opted to have the ankle replaced. There are a lot of risks, but it turned out great.
Well, good for you.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, in your situation, for the person with arthritis in their ankle, they're starting to do more ankle joint replacements, but it's still a very small percentage of them. But you have a choice, either the replacement or the fusion. The fusion's most common for ankle arthritis. Mike's issue was basically instability, and so fusion would be the only choice for him.
Thanks very much for calling. And Bill and Lori, thank you so much. You'll be back third Monday of November, so that's November 21st.
We will.
Outstanding.
We will.
Okay.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you so much. Bill Boisenault, Associate Professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Lori Tyne-Brody, Physical Therapist and Athletic Trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. They'll be back on November 21st. Tomorrow, Dr. Sandy Sawchuk will be here to talk about your pet's health. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.